Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Sometimes, the way the world is, and the systems we toil under, indifferent to our daily struggles, seem just a little unfair. And no matter how hard we try, our ability to change them feels remote at best. In this month's story, set in an alternate reality, a young farm worker decides to change the agreement that his village has struggled under for centuries with their ancient absent rulers. Now, we invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 56, The Tribute. Somewhere and sometime it might prove to be wise to check up on your agreements, especially when the other side appears not to be living up to their part.
The shadow drifted indifferently across the parched field of maize. Casimiro, stiff from shocking corn behind the relentless cutters, stood for a second, straightening his overused back in a vain attempt to ease the pain. He wiped the sweat from his brow with an old scrap of cloth his mother had salvaged from the landfill near the old abandoned city, then looked up to catch a glimpse of the sky palace, slowly plying west in the cloudy gray sky. Like everyone still scratching out an existence in the great Amazonian savanna, he knew through stories handed down from generation to generation that somewhere in the immense floating city, the Seals, their family, and aides lived. Casimiro wondered what it would be like to live up there. Might one of them be looking down at this very moment, watching him standing amongst the maize shocks? That thought made Casimiro nervous, so he quickly returned to his work. The sun was setting as Casimiro left the muddy fields for home. To make up for their slow progress, the foreman had kept them working for 2 extra hours. He had no real choice, as the harvest needed to be completed a week before the tribute was due, so it could be properly prepared in the manner prescribed by the village contract. Exhausted by the day's work, Casimiro made his way along the wagon tracks that wound their way from the maize fields to his colonia, passing the ancient landfill. Vendors squeezed around the trail near the immense garbage dump, hawking the salvage they had scavenged from its seemingly endless pit. Not a career without its dangers, Casimiro knew. Many a merchant's picker had disappeared in the landfill and the decaying city behind it while digging for wares to sell. It was believed that something lived in there, something that didn't appreciate the pilfering pickers. So Casimiro was happy that he had a job in the fields, a much safer choice despite the low wage. A lone streetlight flickered to life as Casimiro passed, illuminating a group of old harvesters who were huddled around the tin shack that served beer, swatting away the flies which buzzed around the vendor's single exposed light bulb.
"Hey, Casimiro,"
someone yelled from the shadows beyond the humming street lamp.
"I found some good ones today. North American, Hollywood, I think. Early 2000s, still in good shape. I've polished them up and tested them for defects. All work fine."
"Sorry, Cosmo. I don't have much money today,"
Casimiro wearily responded.
"Come on, Casimiro, just one. It's been a slow month. I need to eat too. Please?"
Casimiro had known Cosmo since he was 4. They had been box neighbors in the colonias, so he couldn't refuse.
"Okay, but just one,"
he said, drifting over to the discs his friend had carefully laid out on a small blanket in a rare gap between the stalls.
"Try this one. It's about aliens who come to Earth and end up living in a colonia like us."
Cosmo pleaded with his eyes.
"Sure."
Casimiro reluctantly agreed, dug into his pocket for his food money, and passed it over to his friend. He thanked a now grateful Cosmo, stuffed the disc into his pocket, and went quickly home, planning how he would justify the purchase to his family. But they would understand, he reasoned. People in the colonias helped each other out. And besides, they had bread and beans left over from yesterday, and now they had a new movie as well to watch on the disc layer that the town tinkerer had kludged together from the landfill. Few in the colonia owned a player. Casimiro's family was very fortunate. Most of its members had jobs, affording them a few luxuries now and then. After following the trail past the landfill, then down through the crumbling edge of the abandoned city, Casimiro finally arrived well after dark in the colonia where their two-room box sat, in a cramped lane on the side of a hill. Exhausted from the extra-long day, Casimiro plodded up the muddy path, trying to keep in the center to avoid getting his feet dirtied in the foul-smelling streams of liquid waste that encroached on each side. He looked up and saw his mother seated at the fire pit under the corroded tin roof that limply extended from the front of their box to protect the cooking area. Elaine greeted him, beckoning Casimiro to sit on a worn plastic crate set against the wall of the box. He eased on to the little bench, pushing his back into the rough boards of the wall, then stretched his legs out toward the dying fire.
Our neighbor Amerio was out there today. He's working on the wagons now, did you know? He said that the harvest was behind, so we knew you would be late and ate the rest of the bread and beans from last night.
His mother apologetically informed him.
I hope you don't mind.
That's okay, Mama,
Casimiro said, relieved that he would not be chastised for spending his day's wage on something other than food. He knew he would have to go without. So despite his grumbling stomach, he lied.
I had an extra big lunch today. One of the cutters brought a whole cooked chicken. Can you imagine that? We all dined like the seals, so I'm not hungry.
Elaine simply smiled and nodded thoughtfully.
Did you meet your friend Cosmo in the market on your way home? I hear he's not doing too well. Not a good season for luxury items, I think.
She added, then threw a questioning gaze at Casimiro.
Yes, I did,
Casimiro confirmed as he brought the carefully wrapped silver disc out of his pocket and presented it to a somewhat skeptical Elaine.
Look, we can invite the neighbors and have a tribute party,
he enthusiastically tried to suggest.
Good,
Elaine unexpectedly shot back.
At least Cosmo will eat for a few nights now. And I think you could stand to lose a little weight yourself.
Which wasn't true at all. Casimiro was as thin as a blade of grass.
Armiro saw you in the market and told me.
Satisfied, Elaine winked, then moved on to more serious matters.
Will we make the maize quota for tribute? There are rumors. The rains were wrong again this season, and they say that the crops have not done well. Much worse than last year, I've been told. After the tribute takes its share, it will be very hard to make it to the next harvest.
It's not as bad as people say, Mama. And a few long days will catch us up. We'll be fine.
Casimiro tried to console. Elaine did not challenge the well-intentioned lie and appeared to relax.
Enough with worrying about the future. We should all live in the present, so I will make the plans. We'll have a tribute party and watch the movie. Parties are always good for the soul, and heaven knows we need something to put us in good spirits now.
Carefully, as if it were made of crystal, Elaine slipped the slim disc into her apron pocket. The next day started like any other. Casimiro rose before dawn, ate a quick breakfast of old stale bread and an apple he picked from the community tree, which he ate as he hurriedly walked to the fields. Just after the market stalls, he spotted something shiny on the side of the trail. Looking around to make sure no one saw him, he stopped and bent down to examine the glinting object. It was a shard of an ancient mirror, no doubt dropped by one of the pickers who supplied the stalls. A lucky find, Casimiro thought. He picked up the small prize, then hurried off to the fields, worried he would be late now. As it turned out, it was not a good day. Yet another unseasonal downpour had, by mid-morning, turned the harvest into an arduous, muddy slog. And by noon, they had fallen yet another day behind, making it doubtful if the harvest could be completed in time. So it was no surprise, as dark approached, that they were told they would have to work under the wan light of the moon that would soon peek out from behind the broken clouds. Everyone was exhausted, but few complained. The tribute quota could not be missed. They all knew the consequences. The seals would withhold the rain, even as erratic as it had become lately. Any was better than none. So they determinedly worked on as the sun dipped. Just after moonrise, Casimiro stopped for a break and saw the dark silhouette of the Sky Palace, late by several hours, so they could check to see that the villagers were still working to fulfill the contract. Casimiro wondered. It wasn't fair, he decided. The rain, which was a gift from the seals for the tributes, had not come when promised. Dry at the beginning of the season, now wet when they were trying to salvage what little had survived the drought. The seals had not kept their part of the ancient contract as far as Casimiro was concerned, and the season had been a disaster. Floating over every other day, surely the seals had witnessed this, Casimiro reasoned. Surely the seals didn't expect the usual tribute. but the elders in the village had insisted that it still be paid, lest next season was made worse than the one now passed. The fearful elders needed to talk to the seals, Casimiro decided, explain what had happened, how the weather had been reversed, how that was the responsibility of the Sky Palace, not the Colonias. They had kept their part of the bargain. As tribute day approached, Casimiro's mother prepared for the celebration with the box neighbors. She had put him to work when he was not in the fields, picking through the landfill, looking for extra things that they might need. One evening, as Casimiro was making his way out of the hills of rubble, he met an old picker that he had never seen before. She approached him from behind, tapping Casimiro on the shoulder, which gave him such a start that he dropped his bag of scavenged booty and started to run.
"Hey, stop! I mean you no harm,"
the woman yelled apologetically after him. Seeing it was just an old woman in fading rags from a much earlier time, she had obviously gathered from somewhere in the ruins, he slowly turned to pick up his sack.
"Are you looking for things for the celebration?"
the ancient, weathered woman asked.
"For my family," Casimiro corrected. "We've had better fortunes than our neighbors this season, so we are hosting a tribute celebration for the boxes in our lane. On the hillside over there,"
he pointed in the rapidly fading light.
"That's our colonia.
So high up, it must catch the morning sun. How nice for you,"
the old woman optimistically suggested, then changed the subject.
"I've been watching you for the last couple of days. You know, if you go past the dump and further into the old city proper, there is much better pickings."
"Too dangerous," Casimiro automatically replied.
"We like to spread that idea to scare off all but the most desperate,"
the old picker chuckled.
"But most who go there never come back."
"True. Many who venture into the center of the old towers choose to stay with us. We're not forced to break our backs to collect enough for the tribute, then toil even harder to gather more to peck out a living from the measly leftovers. The ruins are not part of the contract lands. They were considered dead in ancient times. We live off what the seals left behind, and where the ground has recovered, we plant small gardens. A humble, but nevertheless free life."
Casimiro looked doubtful. Undisturbed, the woman motioned for him to sit down.
"Come, I will tell you more if you let me."
Interested despite himself, Casimiro settled down on a discolored, upturned, broken plastic bucket.
"So are you telling me there are no wild human-eating beasts? Or poison spots so toxic that to step inside one means certain death? At least that's what we were always told to explain why so many pickers disappear,"
Casimiro defensively stated.
"Oh, that. Those are just the stories that we seed and like to encourage. But let me assure you that the only deaths from those who have disappeared are from old age."
The ragged woman winked.
"Let me explain. A few of the old ones believe that as the seals escaped to the sky after the great disturbance, they poisoned the center of the old city, and that is why the ruins were not made part of the contract. No one could live there. But they let the people remain in the colonias, guaranteed that they would bring favorable rains for crops if we stayed there and paid the tribute."
"But why would they poison the ruins?" Casimiro asked.
"The disturbance was many, many generations ago,"
the old picker began.
"Over time, people simply forget, then make up details to meet their own needs. So who is to say what really happened, why the seals felt they needed to flee to the sky and leave us behind to support them? They may just simply have wanted their old city to be left alone. Who knows? But enough of old history. It is safe enough today. Any poisoned ground has long ago lost its potency. Did you know that the ruins were once great towers?"
Casimiro shook his head.
"They were taller than the rise your colonia is on."
The young man turned to look up at the hill, covered in a rambling patchwork of tiny box homes that formed his colonia.
"Well, that's all very interesting history. But as of late, the seals have not been doing a good job of keeping up their end of the contract, have they?"
he angrily muttered.
"The colonias should stop paying the tribute,"
the old woman grunted.
"They're all too afraid. Too afraid that even the rain that comes at the wrong time will stop if they do."
"They should negotiate a new one,"
the old picker impatiently pointed out.
"How? The seals never come down from the sky.
Casimiro waved an arm at the clouds.
Well then, it's obvious. Someone should go up to them.
The old woman retorted.
But this is not my concern. We who live in the ruins are free of such things.
Suddenly, she leapt up much quicker than Casimiro thought a woman of her years should be able to, and with a dismissive wave of her hand, left, hiking over the irregular hillocks of the landfill at a spry pace. Casimiro sat as the last light in the sky began to disappear, thinking about what the old woman had told him, and became determined to do something. The next morning, Casimiro traded jobs with one of the loaders at the end of the field near the grain carts, out of sight of the bosses. Carefully, he watched the sky for the familiar shape of the great floating palace, impatiently loading corn onto the waiting carts until like clockwork it emerged from the brown haze of the horizon. Casimiro kept one eye on the floating city and the other on the knoll that separated the carts from the rest of the harvest. While he finished loading the lead cart, the CO's cloud crept through the sky until it was almost overhead. Casimiro stood up and looked around. No one was in sight. Carefully, he took the shard of mirror out of his pocket. He had wrapped it in a scrap of cloth to protect it, unfolded the rag, then used it to polish the shiny fragment. Casimiro held the mirror up in front of him until he saw its irregular shape nervously flicker on the shadowed belly of the CO's cloud. He moved the reflection up and down its length, trying to catch what he assumed to be tiny windows that dotted the upper section, until another worker appeared at the top of the knoll. Pretending to be wiping sweat from his brow, Casimiro quickly hid the mirror in his pocket and went back to work. Unresponsive, the sky palace drifted indifferently by. Casimiro's indignation at the apparent ignorance of the seals to his village's situation made him even more determined to get their attention. So each day from then on, when the great sky palace passed over, Casimiro hid somewhere in the field and flashed his broken mirror, trying to signal the palace, and each day it passed by without a response. Only once did he see a flash or two from somewhere near the top of the artificial cloud, which might or might not have been a response. Frustrated, Casimiro finally realized that he had no other choice, and began to make plans. The great sky palace nosed hungrily over the bald rise of the now empty maize fields, causing the tribute ritual to come to a peak. The night before, Casimiro had slipped out while everyone was asleep, making his way in the wan moonlight to the town square, where the tribute baskets lay beneath their half-inflated balloons. Working silently in the shadows, he removed his own weight in maize flour from one of the baskets near the edge. Then, in several trips, almost being caught twice, he had taken the stolen tribute and buried it in a special spot that only he and his family knew about. Before leaving for the celebration, he had left a note explaining he was tired of living under the tyranny of the contract and had gone to the ruins to live with the outsiders, and that he had created a cache of food for them. Someone in the crowded square shouted, announcing the impending arrival of the seals. When the villagers looked up to watch, Casimiro slipped underneath the launch platform, then wormed his way up through the narrow slit he had made in the basket the night before. As soon as he was inside, he pulled the narrow opening shut, then began to repair the spot with the ropey reeds he had stuffed into his pocket for the purpose. He had little time to fix the hole before the great balloon launched. Casimiro heard the bellows begin to fan the fire, heating the air in the balloon, and the ropes holding it to the basket began to creak. The timing was critical. The tribute had to rise in front of the cloud so it could be taken in. There had been stories about the misfortune brought about on one village when the tribute was launched too late, missing the reach of the seals. But not today. Casimiro worked frantically to get the last few stitches in place as he felt the basket begin to strain and creak. The small dark world around him deformed as the basket lifted, causing everything in it to roll to the center, pinning Casimiro between two large food sacks. Groans of protest seemed to come from every fiber in the basket as it overcame its natural inclination to stay put. Casimiro fearfully looked down and noticed that the slit had opened a bit, straining against his now fragile-looking stitching. He painfully imagined the result if his makeshift repair broke, and maneuvered himself to become a human plug in case it did. He could hear the muffled singing of the tribute hymn, and for a brief moment thought he recognized his mother's silky tones among the raspy voices and felt guilty about leaving his family. He hoped the cache of food would ease her loss when she discovered him missing. Slowly, their voices began to fade, replaced by the gentle sound of the wind and the occasional creak of the basket. It began to gently rock, making Casimiro feel sleepy. He drifted up, losing track of time. It seemed like hours in the dark, but it could have only been a few minutes, when suddenly the soothing motion was rudely interrupted by the violent jerk of an unseen hand that had reached out and grabbed the helpless balloon. Casimiro heard mechanical clicks and the shrill protest of equipment in need of attention as the basket tipped onto its side and was dragged across a rough surface. Near silence filled the space until Casimiro saw a flash through the weave of the basket and a loud, thundering bang. He knew that the tribute had been accepted, and the seals had seeded the clouds, giving rain to his village for another season. He smiled, thinking how his friends and family would be rejoicing at their success, then slumped back against the grain sack and waited for the seals' attendants to unload the tribute. He realized they hadn't thought past this moment and began to worry about what he would say when he was found. And his resolve began to fade. He questioned if this had been such a wise thing to do. But with no way to go back, Casimiro sat anxiously in the darkness, resigned to his fate, and now most likely that of his villages. The seconds dragged out into minutes, then into dozens of minutes. The silence was only interrupted by the contented, indifferent hum of machinery going mindlessly about its work. No one came. Casimiro nervously waited, anxiety growing, and still, no one came. Finally, with his legs cramped in pain, Casimiro gathered his courage, pushed his way up through the rough sacks until his eyes could see, then timidly glanced around the dark cavernous space, like a ground squirrel checking for hawks. He saw no one, no guards, no workers, not even an insect. Casimiro squirmed out of the basket, tentatively setting first one foot, then another on the floor. It was only then he noticed that his village's tribute was moving steadily along a conveyor with other baskets of grain. He recognized the decorations of several nearby colonias on some of the other tributes, their order revealing the course that the Sky Palace had taken. In the murky interior, they slowly glided toward one end of the compartment. Casimiro, not knowing what else to do, decided to follow the crawling tributes further into the dark heart of the city-sized palace. Feeling like a stowaway, he crept along the line of baskets, keeping as low as he could to avoid detection, stopping every few feet to see if someone had come in to get him. The further he moved toward the heart of the chamber, the warmer it became. Casimiro thought he could see an orange glow at the head of the line. Hesitantly, he continued, until he realized that the row of slow-moving tributes ended in the angry flames of an open furnace. He witnessed a basket falling in, then slumped down on his knees, stunned by the revelation. Their food. Food they could not afford to spare was being used as fuel, burnt, simply dumped into the maw of an indifferent furnace. A deep-rooted resentment that Casimiro did not know was there welled up and he clenched his hands into fists. "Burning our food," he muttered, then yelled. "All the years, all the scrounging to make the tributes, and you simply burn them? Does it give you pleasure to see us suffer? Do you laugh at us as you glide above our heads?" Suddenly realizing that yelling might bring unwanted attention, Casimiro stopped, his chest heaving, half daring the palace guards to appear and drag him to the seals, where he would defiantly spit in their eyes. But still, no one arrived to arrest him. And gradually, the patient hum of the conveyor and the low rumble of the furnace came to fill the stale air again. Casimiro got to his feet and watched helplessly as his village's tribute inexorably inched its way toward the fiery pit. Desperately, he ran through the great furnace room, frantically searching for something to jam the conveyor. But there was nothing to be found, except for years of dust. Finally defeated, Casimiro watched his village's baskets of badly needed food tilt, then roll into the flames. Tears welled up in his eyes, and suddenly feeling exhausted, Casimiro groped his way to the closest wall, slumped down against its grimy surface, then reluctantly fell asleep. A thin wedge of sunlight, knifing through a broken shutter, streaked across the floor and up the wall, painting an overexposed slash of brilliance on Casimiro's face. The warm red glow against the back of his closed eyelids slowly brought Casimiro out of a dream. Luxuriating in the warmth of the sun, he lazily stretched before opening his eyes, then sat bolt upright as he remembered where he was. Several new tributes had been added to the line while he was asleep. He didn't recognize the village flags that proudly draped the doomed, overflowing baskets. Nevertheless, his anger returned as he brushed thick, clinging clumps of dust from his body. Instinctively, he headed toward the busy, indifferent conveyor, determined this time to somehow jam it, when a disembodied voice haltingly called out,
"Stop! The Sky Palace floats on the tip of the flame. So the fire must never be allowed to go out. The tributes must be paid and consumed. In return, the corporation graciously spreads the seeds of rain. That is the contract, and it cannot be broken."
"The seals have already broken it. The rain now comes at the wrong time, and the crops fail. We can't afford the tribute anymore. We'll starve,"
Casimiro angrily screamed back, spinning on his heels to see where the ghostly voice had come from. But no one was in the great room with him. He was all alone with the machinery that was mindlessly consuming the latest tributes. The sound of grinding across a gritty metal surface drew Casimiro away from the conveyor. As he searched for the source of this new sound, he noticed a dark, arched opening in the far wall that he swore hadn't been there before. Casimiro took this as an invitation, and without hesitating, walked through it into a dimly lit corridor which seemed to spiral in toward the center of the palace and up to its top. The passage was covered with a thick layer of dust and debris. Casimiro guessed that it hadn't been used in many decades. As he walked, the disembodied voice returned, taunting him with gibberish Casimiro didn't understand.
"Authorization expired. Please create new voice record. Authorization expired. Immediate attention required for access. Please provide voice sample. No access can be granted until Chief Executive Officer is reauthorized. Please provide voice sample."
Casimiro continued to edge up the passage, trying his best to ignore the taunts of the ghost, until his way was blocked by a featureless door.
"Ghost, tell the seals I'm here," he demanded. "Tell them the contract must end or we'll starve. Tell them—"
The voice abruptly cut Casimiro off.
"Voice print recorded. Access to the Chief Executive Office is granted."
Sounding like it was in pain, the rusted door obediently jerked open, flooding the hall in brilliant white. Casimiro carefully inched over the threshold, squinting, trying to adjust his eyes to the painfully intense light streaming through the windows of a luxuriant room. Like the rest of the Sky Palace, every surface was coated in a thick layer of dust and grime. Large windows formed three walls of the room. Casimiro noticed that one had been broken, large shards of glass left dangling from the rubber that had once held the now-shattered pane in the frame. A gentle breeze disturbed one piece, causing it to twist and cast brief flashes of light into Casimiro's eyes, making his heart sink at a sudden realization. The signal he had thought he had seen from the fields, like the rest of the Sky Palace, had no human intent behind it. It was just part of a malfunctioning machine which was blindly following the orders of its long-dead masters. Casimiro looked around trying to find the source of the ghost voice. The room was dominated by a horseshoe-shaped rim of tables with windows, some displaying a view of the ground below, but most showing things that Casimiro didn't understand. Cautiously, he approached a large high-backed chair bolted into the floor in the center of the tables. He grasped the armrest nearest to him and spun it around. Only the remnants of some dark cloth caught in the process of turning to dust remained. He unceremoniously brushed the rotting fabric away, then sunk into the seat.
"CO, status report at your request."
The unseen thing patiently waited for Casimiro to respond.
"There are no seals, are there?"
he accused. Magically, the air itself seemed to parrot Casimiro's own voice back, slurring his words like a drunken cutter.
"Seal, I'm he."
"Voice print match. You are the current CO. Do you wish status?"
the voice coldly stated.
No! I wish the tributes to stop!
The voice seemed to ignore Casimiro.
The loading dock has been secured from further tampering. Food will be delivered to you shortly. Do you wish status?
The voice waited. When Casimiro didn't answer, it started again.
I will proceed anyway. There are several systems that need your immediate attention.
It demanded, then appeared to make the table windows that now surrounded Casimiro change to a new set of pictures. The rusty door behind him squealed shut. Maria looked up at the Cutters, who seemed to never tire. She was lucky, inheriting her cousin's job after he had gone crazy and run off to live in the ruins. An all-too-familiar shadow glided indifferently across the field. The Sky Palace appeared almost to hesitate before slowly drifting toward the next village. Feeling guilty about stopping in plain view of the seals, Maria began to tilt her head down, when her eye caught the glint of something flashing rhythmically from a row of windows along one side of the Sky Castle. Fearing that the seals had spotted her, taking an unscheduled break, she resentfully went back to work, then reminded herself that she should be more grateful. At least this season, they would have enough to eat.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 56, Somewhere, Sometime, The Tribute. We hope you enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we are doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review in iTunes. We'd love to hear from you, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com, or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Pod Safe Music by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.